Recording is now started.
Thank you ever so much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the BC Members Call on the 6th of August 2015. On the call today, we have Andy Abrams, Andrew Harris, Beth Allegretti, Elisa Cooper, Ron Andrus, Steve Del Bianco, Cecilia Smith, Susan Kawaguchi, Phil Corwin, Aparna Siddhar, Stephen Coates, and Samantha Dimitriou. We've received apologies from Andy Graves, Stefan Langelder, Catherine Gowen, and Laura Covington. And from staff, we have myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Elisa.
Thanks so much, Natalie. I want to jump right in and turn it over to Steve because he's got a limited period of time, and then I have some information to share with the group under any other business. But Steve, over to you.
Thanks, Elisa. Appreciate that. And thanks to Natalie for displaying the policy calendar. Sent this out 2 days ago. First thing I'll quickly recap for you is the four comments we filed recently. On the 3rd of August, Andy Abrams drafted an excellent comment on four new GTLDs for geo names. Thanks again, Andy. I'm glad we got that in. A lot of you know that on July the 24th, we filed an extensive comment in the GNSO review draft report. Big thanks to Laura Covington, J. Scott Emmons, and Marie Petullo for that. After we filed it, the NCSG, Non-Commercial Stakeholders Group, said to us, let's do a group letter calling for a structural review of GNSO. And we agreed, the IPC agreed, and the ISPs also agreed. But in a little bit of a twist, the Non-Commercial Stakeholders Group themselves began to have dissenting views about whether they should team with us and ask for a structural review. And I read some of their email lists, and, you know, suffice to say, they can't figure out whether cooperating with us is really going to suit their purposes, even though we both believe that the structure of GNSO doesn't help CSG or NCSG. But we have completely different reasons for feeling that the structure is not quite right for us. So based on that, they decided not to file. And you know, we'll part as friends and probably fight this battle again at some point. And then on July 7th and 8th, we filed comments on privacy and proxy services. And again, a set of renewals for CAT and PRO. And thanks again to Phil Corwin, Andy Mack, Jim Baskin, Andy Abrams, and Ellen Blackler, okay? So let's turn to the current ICANN public comments. This will be easy because really only one of them is due in the short term, and the rest are due in the distant future, not till September. So this ought to be quick. So the very first one here is referenced on the first attachment to today's policy calendar, and the fact is that the board is about to make a decision on the translation and transliteration of the contact information. This is pursuant to a PDP recommendation. Now, the BC filed comments on that PDP initial report back in February of this year, and we have Susan, Ellen Blackler, Steve Coates, and Tim Chen to thank for that. Then on our last two calls, we showed some interest. We realized we cannot convince the board to deny or amend the PDP recommendations of the final report. They won't do that since it's coming over as the final PDP. But we could file a comment reiterating our disagreement with one of the main decisions, which is not to require translation of contact information and who is information. And then we could ask for a post-implementation review at some point so that staff would be able to look at how well is this voluntary translation system working. Now, Steve Coates took up the ball on this and drafted really what I think is an excellent comment to review. It's the first attachment, and it consists of Steve reiterating our earlier points, the main point of disagreement on mandatory translation, and then Steve followed it up with 8 specific questions that we would suggest that ICANN would ask in doing a post-implementation review. So we're getting ourselves on record. If any of the 8 questions turns out to reveal, in our own suspicions, that it's not working very well, comment we're filing to say, would you please do the review? We have suspicions that very few are translating, or they're being translated inconsistently. So this will give you an opportunity to do that. So, Steve, I thought I would turn it over to you for just a moment and walk through what you were thinking when you formulated the 8 questions. And then we'll take a brief period of discussion on that. So this one is due next Tuesday, the 11th of August. Steve, over to you.
Thanks, Steve. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, just fine.
Can you hear me?
Just fine.
Oh, good. Okay. Thanks for the introduction, Steve. I did reiterate our prior position. I tried to make it very pithy in a three-paragraph comment, and then I prepared 8 questions. And I'll admit that I reached out to a few people and got ideas on what those might be, and took a stab at what they are. Would love comments on those to the extent that we've missed anything. To the extent that anything's overreaching or I rely on you to let me know if any will potentially cause any other political problems, especially with the registries. I can get into the specifics, but it's probably not worth the time in this particular venue.
Steve, thanks again for that. I think it's excellent stuff, and it may turn out that the next Who Is review, which is mandated by the affirmation of commitment, we'll end up looking at these questions voluntary translation transliteration. So I'll look in the queue. Is there anyone who has any comments or suggestions on Steve's draft? All right, take until Monday night, the 10th of August, to get back to us with comments on Steve's draft. And since it's based on a prior submission from the BC, I'm very comfortable that we have an abbreviated review period. So comments close the 10th, I meant to say. The comments close on Monday night. So that means that by Sunday night, midnight UTC, on the 9th, I'll need to have comments back to you on Steve's draft so that Steve and I can put it in final form. So if there's no further comments on that, let me just thank Steve again for the drafting. I really appreciate that. Channel 2, if you scroll down for us, Natalie. Thank you. There are still 3 other public comments that I said we're doing in September. Bylaws amendments, the Dot Sharp brand, TLD, and this is dropping their searchable Who Is for a corporate-controlled second-level domain. So, Natalie, if you can scroll up, please, to number 4 under Channel 1. Scroll up just a little higher, please. Natalie, are you there? I don't have scroll control on my screen, folks, so I'm counting on staff to help us with that.
There you go, scrolling is enabled. Sorry about that, Steve.
That's probably better for everybody that way. Thank you. Folks, if you just scroll to the a little lower on page 2, top of page 2. Number 4 is that the Dot Sharp brand TLD wants to drop searchable Who Is for all of its second-level domain, which they will control at the corporate level. I think this is the first time this has happened, and I want to be sure that we're paying attention here. Does anyone have a particular point of view on whether there would be any potential downside or whether we think this is desirable for Dot Brands to disable searchable Who Is? All right, not seeing any hands right away, but we're going to need to look into this. And a number of you have been so good at helping out on Who Is before. So, Susan, go ahead.
I'm just a little concerned that this could be a slippery slope. So I understand why a Dot Brand who's just using it for internal uses does not want to provide a Who Is, but is it really that big of a burden? And, you know, I mean, if it was Dot Facebook, we could just put in all our regular, basically the same information, you know, that's on Facebook.com. So I don't quite understand why they're making that request. You know, I mean, I wouldn't argue strenuously against it, but if anybody else, there's something about it that makes me a little hesitant. And I was wondering if anybody else had any issues with it.
Hi, Susan. This is Andy Abrams. My initial thought is that maybe we draw the line at closed versus open. If it's a closed brand TLD, then it technically should be a single registrant model. And maybe that's why, and I'm happy to kind of look further into it, but it seems like for a closed brand TLD, we wouldn't object simply because it would just be the same registrant over and over for each individual second-level domain.
But even that, wouldn't we want to know that, you know, who that registrant is? I mean, who is an easy look at. Where would we...
Yeah, so what is the searchable part that they would be turning off? You use that feature, the searchable who is feature.
Oh, am I misunderstanding this then? That it's... They would still provide the who is record? I'm sorry, I read that very quickly, so...
Right, my understanding is the who is would still be provided, it just wouldn't be searchable.
Okay, I'm sorry. Misunderstood. But I don't have any objections.
So, given that, Andy, would you take a look at that and see if you can start to form the idea of a BC comment on that?
Sure, I can do that.
Not due until the 11th of September, so a lot of time on that. It won't get in the way of your August break, which I hope you're taking. You've really been working hard for us, and we appreciate it. There's another one in September the 12th. It's number 5 on the policy calendar. It has to do with bylaws amendments based on the GNSO working group. Now, Zahid had helped draft BC comments on these recommendations, and they're more about the GNSO policies and procedures and how to implement GNSO policy. I don't think there's anything controversial there. I'll reach out to Zahid and see if he can help draft another set of those. Now, number 6 and 7 on the policy calendar, they're at the top of page 2 of the attachment, are much bigger deals for us. Again, they don't close until the first week of September, but here's the BC's opportunity to comment once again on the IANA stewardship transition proposal, and then number 7, I'm going to thank Aparna, who's already volunteered to help draft the BC follow-up comments on the IANA stewardship transition. This would be a good opportunity for anyone else who's interested in diving into that to volunteer to help Aparna on this. Last time around, Claudia, Andrew Harris, Ellen Blackler, and Steve Coates, all of you contributed to the BC draft comments.
Steve, it's Andrew. Please sign me up.
Andrew Harris, fantastic. Thank you. It's my assessment that they're not significantly different than where the naming proposal was the last time that we commented in May. However, we do have the protocols and numbers will be part of this because it's a combined proposal. I did want to also mention that Kieran McCarthy and a few other critics have been suggesting that the PTI model is so different than Contraco and that PTI is so deeply, he thinks that separate could be more difficult. And I do think that point that it won't throw the IANA functions up like a jump ball. First time we had an upset with ICANN. So we may have to give a lot of thought to this comment with PTI, and we were in our May comments. They have to provide some support to PTI in a positive way because I think it's going to come under a little bit of criticism. On that? Okay, Aparna, Andrew, thank you both very much. And Steve Coates, too. That's great. All three of you. Number 7 is something that's pretty near and dear to my heart. We've been working on this 30 hours a week for the past CWG on account. And it's long. But it's incrementally different than the first draft that we commented extensively on in June. The big difference is that instead of requiring each of the ACs and SOs to become a legal member, we're just suggesting that the community itself is a sole member of ICANN. And this eliminates any potential legal mischief that could be wrought by a member who wanted to exercise statutory rights under California law. The rest of this proposal, it's very similar to what we commented on in June. But again, I have to caution you, it's quite long. And the executive summary is a good read, but until one dives into the details, tougher to know where the comments should be. We didn't structure this report with a series of questions to answer, so we'll have discretion on what in the draft we wish to comment on. And we might well use as a guide the comments we filed in June and take it from there. Well, so many of you helped to to draft those comments in June. I'm willing to work. I take the lead, perhaps, but I did want to make sure that as many members as are interested can get involved in that. So any interest from folks in the BC at working on the accountability enhancements, these aren't due until 12th of September. It's great to have Aparna, Andrew Harris, Steve, but we need some others. Go ahead.
Steve, it's David Ferris. I'm Chris Wilson is stuck and not able to join, but I'll nominate him.
Okay, David, great. So Chris Wilson and Dave Ferris.
Hi, Steve. It's Lisa O'Howell, and I'll be happy to help as well.
That's great, Lisa. Really appreciate it. So Lisa and David, I'll send a note around to both of you as a reminder, because it's probably good to dive into our draft report now, get an understanding of what's in there. At the end of next week, I'll be able to give you details on which of the BC's comments have been incorporated in the draft, because we're analyzing all the public comments to be able to show how, let's say, the BC or the IPC's suggestions made their way in. One particular suggestion the BC had made it into Workstream 2, but it's still something that's committed to. Andrew Harris, go ahead.
Thanks. Obviously, would be happy to help here too, but I had just was wondering real quick if we were going to have any time on this call for you to provide us some highlights of where things stand and where you think the biggest issues with the draft are at this point.
Yeah, Andrew, I'd be happy to give a two-minute overview. Earlier I said that we changed the structure so that the community is the member, not each and every AC and SO. And that means that we'll be able to exercise all these powers to overturn a bylaws change, to block a budget, to spill the board, to launch an IRP. All of these decisions will be taken by ACs and SOs voting in the same way we vote today, and there will be no change, no legal structure. It's only if ICANN refused to follow the results of the voting that's laid out in the bylaws that we would end up trying to use our legal and statutory rights as a member, but it would be the entire community acting as a member. So I think we've removed, instead of added controversy with that move. An area where we're going to have some pushback is from the governments, who still don't like the fact that there's been several ways that government powers have been trimmed in moderate but significant ways at ICANN. But at the same time, we invited with open arms that the government is a multi-equal stakeholder, and we're allowing the government to have five votes, five of the 29 votes in the community voting mechanism. It's not entirely clear that the government will get its act together in order to be able to exercise those votes, but we did welcome them as multi-equal stakeholders. At the same time, we did implement Stress Test 18, which is to change ICANN's bylaws so that only GAC consensus advice would merit the deference that we give it today, which is to try and find a mutually acceptable solution. And Andrew, I know this is near and dear to your heart. We changed the bylaws in significant ways so that if the board of ICANN followed GAC advice that was in violation of the bylaws, either by expanding its mission or by failing to follow the bottom-up multi-stakeholder process, then an IRP, or independent review panel, could file a binding decision overturning the ICANN board action. The GAC is well aware that this is designed in many ways to stop the GAC from coming in over the top with advice that undermines the entire bottom-up process. The GAC is well aware that this could compromise some of their influence at ICANN. So there's a lot of pushback from the GAC, and it's likely that the GAC will not be able to take a position on the CCWG report because they're split. They won't oppose it, and I don't think they'll endorse it either, but individual governments will then weigh in. So I feel like there's the largest source of controversy. On a call 2 days ago, Steve Crocker weighed in with something that also could prove controversial. I told you earlier that in response to Stress Test 14, we brought the entire affirmation of commitments into ICANN's bylaws so that they're permanent part of the bylaws instead of something that ICANN could cancel. Well, that includes the reviews, and one of the reviews is the WHOIS review. Another is the review of the new GTLD program. And Steve Crocker was on the phone on our first webinar this week suggesting that the WHOIS review should not be to the bylaws. He feels that the WHOIS review is destructive and should be completely changed while bringing it in to the bylaws, if at all. So that's ignited a new controversy, and we're going to have to work that out in the public comment. The Who Is Review itself is something I know Susan has worked on twice, and it's a tremendous tool that we have to hold ICANN accountable to the obligations of maintaining Who Is. So, Andrew, I hope that helps in way of a little bit of a background. Susan, your hand's up. Go ahead.
So I was not did not listen to that webinar, but somebody else brought that Steve's comments to my attention. And Steve has a tendency, you know, I've spent a lot of time working with him now because of the EWG, and he has a tendency to sort of go off on tangents and but then reins it back in. And so I think what his, you know, the person that came to me about it had actually had another conversation with Steve offline. And he doesn't object to the Who Is review, but does object to how it's described and wants the DCWG bylaw language to better reflect policy and obligations. So I don't think it's an outright, we don't want this. You know, he does not want to see a review happen, but he would like to tweak some of that language. So I'll dig into that a little bit more and see if we can't come up with language that he would approve. Well, we don't really care completely if he approves or not, but it that he might be comfortable with and that would also get us where we want it to be.
Thanks, Susan. So far, Steve has just complained that the language in the affirmation of commitments was inappropriate from the start and suggested we should never have signed it. We should never have done it that way. But that happened in 2009, and you've been part of a party that's done a Who Is review since then. What Steve has not yet, to my knowledge, suggested new language. Instead, he just saying, don't bring it over, and that's not going to work. We're not going to be able to dump an affirmation review and claim to ICANN stakeholders in Congress that we've preserved ICANN's obligations. So if we do work with the language, I don't think a significant change will be allowed, but a small change might be. I think that we are trying to be loyal to the affirmation.
No, and I am not advocating for, you know, his point of view of not allowing or not bringing it over, the affirmation of commitments. But I do think that we, with some additional discussion with him, could sort of address his concerns, maybe not in our document. I mean, I think we should be strong on that point, but maybe in the background just sort of settle him down again, because this is a constant with him. But he also hasn't gained any traction, in my opinion, to push back and make a true change. So let me see what I can do and come up with.
Thanks, Susan. In the chat, I've pasted the language we brought over from the affirmation for the Who Is review, review number 4. And what I pasted in the chat are the two paragraphs that Steve Crocker says shouldn't be there. But these paragraphs are the entire meat of what that affirmation review is about. So that's what we have to work with. There's no giant hurry on this. We have until the end of September to do it.
Okay.
There are some like Aubrey Doria who are saying, let's just punt this to work stream 2. But very few of us want to do that, since we want to bring the affirmation over intact. If we have to tweak it in a certain way like you're discussing, then let's explore that. But thanks, Susan, for looking into that.
All right.
All right. Elisa, I now have to drop, but I'm going to hand the ball to Susan and Phil to handle Channel 2, which is on council as well.
Thank you, as always, Steve. Susan, Phil?
Yeah, I'm on. Susan, how did you want to proceed?
Sorry, Phil. Go ahead.
Okay. There's not a whole lot. The last council meeting was the same day as the last BC call. There were some action items coming out of that meeting. One of them was on TLD auction proceeds, where stakeholder groups and constituencies are encouraged to provide input to the now active public comment forum. one item which came up since the meeting that I forwarded to the BC was council received a letter from Steve Crocker to Jonathan Robinson advising him that on June 21st, the NGPC met to further address the an item from the Beijing communique, GAC advice, the advice being for strings representing generic terms, exclusive registry access should serve a public interest goal. And that letter, in that letter, the NGPC requested the GNSO to include the exclusive issue of exclusive registry access for generic strings serving a public interest goal to take a look at that issue. So that's going to be on the council agenda. The big issue for the BC and the entire commercial stakeholder group is that the existing chairman, Jonathan Robinson, is term limited. There's going to be a new chair of the GNSO council who will take his seat midway through the council meeting in Dublin, and the non-contracted side of the House needs to see if it can agree on a candidate to run for chair from the non-contracted side, as well as vice chair. So that's before us. I should note also that the seat I'm filling, my term expires. I was filling out the unexpired portion of Gabby's term. Mine expires in October, so there's, we're going to need a an election to decide who fills that seat going forward from Dublin for the coming 2 years. And that's pretty much it for council. Did you have anything to add, Susan?
No, I just think, you know, we should probably discuss the candidates a little bit, because the candidate coming forward for the chair of the GNSO council is, and I'm blanking on her last name, Heather? I'm sorry.
Heather Wilson?
Heather Forrest. No,
Forrest.
Heather
Forrest.
Thank you.
Right.
Sorry. And then James Liddell has, you know, stated his interest to me, at least, and running for the registrar group. So those are the only two candidates I've heard of. And, I mean, obviously Heather Forrest would, is the from the IPC, and, you know, that we would have to decide to support her, which I think she would be a great candidate. But that looks like it may be the race right now, and it's just whether or not we could gain enough support. And I've also put my name forward for vice chair. Not that I think that it's that important that I become vice chair, but I thought we should have a candidate. And if Heather was voted in, then I would assume we would not have, you know, we would not have a chair and a vice chair from the CSG. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out also.
Susan, this is David. It's my understanding that the non-contracted party house is supposed to nominate both someone for chair and vice chair.
Right. But I just think in the long run, would we win both seats is what I would
say. Right.
Right. On that, I think the prohibition is that the chair and vice chair can't be from the same constituency or stakeholder group. I'm not sure if it's stakeholder group. We can check that out, but there's
right.
a restriction on that.
Well, and you know, it could be that, you know, if my name's put forward, then that's, it's like a throwaway. Oh, we'll, you know, we'll pull my nomination and, you know, but support Heather completely. And see if that isn't a give we could, you know, use for, you know, negotiation with the contracted parties house.
All right. Anything else on council?
No, I think that was it, but just to put everyone on notice that our side of the House needs to nominate a candidate by September 25th, which is some time, but August goes fast. So it's on the radar screen now.
Yep. Well, thanks, Susan. Thanks, Phil, as always. Natalie, can you pull the agenda back up? I think next on the agenda is probably Jimson. So, Jimson, over to you.
Okay. Can you hear me? Lisa, can you hear me?
Yes, we
can. We can hear you.
Okay. So, good day, everyone. Okay, good day, everyone. I'm in the room, and the network might be a little unclear, but bear with me. I have very brief reports. One is that we should expect the FY16 invoice from today. Two, just to let us know that we are making progress with the process of registering the BC as a non-profit organization to obtain tax ID and employee ID numbers required by a number of our members for ease of processing their dues. So we are currently discussing with a law firm, Greenberg and Lieberman, who has accepted to be a registered agent and the responsible party on our behalf with regard to filing and external documentation purposes. So ESCOM is currently reviewing the terms and should be through this by the end of the week. For us to proceed with the engagement. I would like to thank the Finance Committee, the members of the Finance Committee, Angie Graves, Chris Chaplow, for their support on this, and also appreciating Phil Cohen for his advisory this doing on this matter going forward. I also use this opportunity to alert our Charter Review Committee that there will be need to update the Charter to include provision like delegate filing to its General Counsel, to delegate filings to its General Counsel, and also that BC designate an officer to whom the General Counsel will answer to, and also that BC appoints General Counsel as the responsible party on legal matters. You can recall that we have to take this course because I can decline a request for banking and invoicing support, so we needed to go this route. Invariably, we are the first to take this route. So the third point I want to mention is with regard to trips coming up in Joburg, South Africa, so it's still on schedule. And finally, that members wishing to submit articles for our ICANN 4 newsletter, they have till August 25th to do so. They have till August 25th to do so. So I don't know if there are questions for me or on our engagement of legal counsel, going forward, and other matters I've raised already. Thank you. Back to you, Elisa.
Thank you. Any questions for Jimson? Okay, I'll turn it over to David Ferris.
Elisa, Chris Chaplow here.
Yes, hi, Chris.
Hi there. Yeah, not so much as a question, just a comment, and really to thank Jimson and Angie, because this particular problem, i.e. that the BC doesn't have any legal status other than mere mention in the ICANN bylaws, was one that I encountered right at the beginning of my tenure as vice chair, and we looked at different options, and none of them were easy, none of them, they were all expensive, And, you know, I have to confess to, we sort of kicked the can down the road a bit with this one, of what to do with it, because it isn't easy. And just to thank Angie and Jimson, and when the XCOM and the members review something that, you know, wow, I didn't realize we sort of had this problem, I just want to underline, yes, I'm afraid the problem is there. This is a long-term solution, and I support Jimson and Angie and whoever on it. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. That's really helpful to have that background. Any questions for Chris? All right. Well, I'd like to also thank the entire financial review group as well. So thank you for all of your work on this. David, over to you. I think we may have covered much of what you wanted to talk about, but over to you.
Actually, we covered everything that I was going to talk about when we were talking about the council election. So thank you.
Fantastic. So I have a couple of items for any other business that I'll ask and see by a show of hands if there are others that also have items for any other business to cover. Okay. So I have a couple of items. First, we did have the standard SOACSGC call, which, you know, occurs on a monthly basis with FODI. And the call was fairly non-eventful. I think the big point that he was making on the call was that he felt that the IANA transition, for the most part, was on track. You know, I think the risks that, you know, he sees are, you know, if there were to be a major change to governance, that would, you know, could have a very negative impact on timing. But assuming that doesn't occur, also, you know, he recognized that if something were to happen outside of ICANN politically, you know, if there was some change with the U.S. agreement to, you know, obviously relinquish the contract, like obviously that would have, you know, that would, you know, be a major risk. But assuming that neither of those things happen, you know, he felt that things were fairly well on track. Any questions about that? Another item for housekeeping. So we also need to appoint two members to the nominating committee, one for small business and one for big business. So Zahid Jamil, who has been our small business rep, has agreed to continue on for another term. There is no one opposing or that is also interested in running for that small business seat at this time. I did ask for anyone that was interested if they let the list know by the end of the week. Now, for the big business seat, both Lisa O'Howell from VF Corp and Steve Coates from Twitter have both expressed interest. So, you know, assuming there aren't any others by the end of the week, I think that we'll need to have an election to determine who should fulfill that role. So that's something we'll need to work on. Any questions about that? Okay. And then I have a final piece of news, which is very difficult to share with you, and that is that after 13 years, I'm going to be leaving Mark Monitor. And so with that, that means that I'll need to step down as the chair, and, you know, I'll leave it in the very capable hands of the remaining XCOM leaders to decide how to move forward. So they were notified yesterday of this. My last day will be the 21st. And, you know, I just want to thank everyone for all of your support over this time. It's been an incredible experience working with you and being part of ICANN. And I want to thank everyone. And, again, it's, you know, a very difficult decision for me, but a new opportunity has presented itself and something I'm excited about. And I fully intend to join the BC once I'm settled in my new position. So I know that's a lot of information, and I had to step away from my desk while I was
sharing that with you. Not everyone here knows this information yet. It'll be made publicly available, publicly known later today. But any questions about any of that?
Alisa, this is David Ferris. I don't have any questions, but all I want to do is thank you very much for your dedication, for your camaraderie, and for the professionalism with which you've held your position. It's been much, much appreciated.
And this is Beth Reddy. I completely agree with David. It's been a pleasure working with you.
And I feel the same way. I really do. So I really, you know, like I said, I appreciate all of the support. You know, we've had definitely over the last few years a number of challenges, but, you know, I'm very proud of where we're at right now. And, you know, I think the BC is respected. We've done a tremendous job and a lot, I mean, just so much of it goes obviously to all the members and Steve Del Bianco, who's not on this call to hear this because he had to leave early, but, you know, he's done a tremendous job. So I feel, you know, very proud for what we've done. And like I said, I'll be back. I'll be back. Anything else from anyone? All right, so I think that kind of brings us to the end of our call. I'm sure you'll probably be hearing from me or the XCOM in terms of next steps for how we'll fulfill the position in the interim, because there's only a few months left, actually, on the term anyways. All right. Thank you so much, everyone. And I believe I'll be with you for one more call. So I look forward to speaking with you. And then, like I said, I'll see you again after I'm settled. So thank you so much, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alisa.